Edwina Farley with you for A Country Breakfast. Time to head out with our rural reporters. This week, a young couple looks to the future as their property in northwest Queensland enters its third year of drought. The Gippsland town of Thorpedale turns to spuds to spearhead a local recovery, and we meet Australia's all-round high school cowboy. We also clamber into the cab of a heavy haulage truck, a mobile home on wheels for driver Heather Jones.
So this is where I sleep. Sometimes refer to it as a coffin because it's so small. Over there you've got my bag and there's a week's clothes. Behind that you've got a plastic box full of food for a week and water, my pillow, and that there's a bunk. So if you're really game, you could join me and you could jump in there one night.
Heather's part of a group encouraging other women to get behind the wheel. Life on the road and the difficulties of getting a start in the trucking industry a bit later. But first stop today, northwest Queensland and the future for one young farming family.
We're just 50k west of Boolya on family-owned place. My granddad and dad started it, so I'm third generation here now. But, you know, fourth generation on both sides of me mum and dad, and sitting at my cattle yards here, we built ours. Used to be all sheep once and now we're all cattle, but you're sitting in the cattle yards with a mob of good Brahman calves and a few AI calves there bellowing in the background.
Brooke McGlinchey is a passionate young grazier. The seasons haven't always been kind to his 40,000 hectare block west of Boolya in northwest Queensland, but he remains positive.
We got sort of half a season and a good season on half the place up the top, but down the bottom there we've missed out a lot, but we've got a flood in the Georgina, so you can't be greedy either, you know.
Hello, I'm Hayley Reno. Three failed wet seasons in a row is enough to make any young family second-guess a life on the land. But some, like the McGlinchies, are rising to meet the challenge. Brooke, his wife Sarah, and two very young sons, Sam and Wyatt, live on Bedalia Station. Unlike most properties in this vast outback region, Bedalia is relatively small. It's a family-run operation, and they're working hard to improve herd fertility and genetics to remain viable.
You need more numbers to make the money, because as dollars per head off an acre, the returns just aren't there to help. Like back in the wool days, you know, we made money. The only money we have in the bank since we've gone into cattle has been left over from wool, so the returns aren't there really. So you just got to work hard and be as efficient as you can, but it sort of comes at a cost too. That's why there's not many small family-owned places left, really, in the Boolya Shire, so yeah, a bit tough.
Things are changing in respect to how much, as you said, land you need just to run the amount of cattle you need to stay profitable. But what specific changes have you guys been making to your business as the industry changes?
Well, we try and you preg test a lot more heavily and a lot more on fertility and genetics, and that's why I sort of moved to doing a bit of AI now to slowly improve my female herd, so... You know, one day hopefully I'll have 500 cows here and they're all AI bred by leading bulls, whether it be Brahman or Angus or Santa, and that's sort of hopefully going to help in the long run. But it's also just a love and a passion of cattle and a breed. You only live out here because you love it, so everything you can do to make it, you know, the best you can, you do. So hopefully that'll pay off one day, but yeah, long time happening.
Yeah, so can you introduce me to this guy?
This fella is bloody... Oh, so King Cade, I think he's called, and as beautiful a bull as you can get. Sam rides him and sits or crawls all over him, though, but and throwing beautiful calves, ain't he? So, but he'd been one of the greatest investments I've made in bull buying and genetics has been him, so he's a bloody real good bull.
And you said he likes the north. He's suited to be out here in the west as well? You
know, good quality. He's always fat and shiny, and he's a beautiful nature like my kids. You know, Sam will walk straight up to him in the paddock and bloody stick his fingers up his nose and bloody crawl under his belly, you know, and that's the future of Brahmins and cattle. He's on big bone, bloody good soft skin and plenty of flesh on him, and that's what he is. So we've got a handful of them now. They're just good, quiet cattle, eh? That's what you want, quiet cattle. Quiet cattle get fatter, so.
He's a family man.
He's a family man.
The dogs love it in there, don't they? Sharing the water.
Brooke's wife Sarah came to northwest Queensland 10 years ago as a governess at a nearby property. It didn't take long for the two of them to meet up, and the rest, as they say, is history. She's telling her story to my colleague, Lydia Burton.
Brooke will always say now, oh yeah, you only came out here to find a husband and everything, but that isn't true at all. Like I think you've got to have a big interest in the first place to, you know, come out here when the furthest west I'd ever been is Dalby. And when I was looking for the job as a governess, I thought, oh, I hope it's out west enough. I really want to go out west. And then I looked on the map and I'm like, yep, I've definitely got the right spot here. So yeah, I did have a big interest, and I think you've got to have that to stay out here because, you know, it's not all roses and everything. So you do have your ups and downs, and it's definitely, yeah, you need that as well. But it just an added bonus that I found my husband out here, and yeah, I really do like it out here. I've learnt so much about cattle and everything through Brooke because, yeah, he does have such a passion for it. The fact that he would go to the effort to learn about AI and get into that, and you can just tell he really loves it and he wants to learn more, and you can see the results. He does, you know, get really nice quiet cattle, and yeah, I'm learning heaps. And sometimes I think, oh, you could stop thinking about cows for just a minute and listen to me. But yeah, no, I think it's really great that Brooke has such a passion for it, and it does rub off on me a bit.
What's the worst job Brooke's given you on the farm?
Oh, he's actually a pretty good boss when I was working for him. I can't complain because I probably did whinge a lot. So, but no, he's been pretty good. Like sometimes in the yards, you know what they say, if you can work with your husband in the yards, it's the best form of marriage counselling. So yeah, you have a few arguments here and there, but in the end you come out better relationship in the end probably. So yeah, it's not too bad.
You and the cattle both have that better relationship.
Exactly, exactly.
So what does the future hold for the McGlinchey family? And will they stay on Badalia? Well, Brooke is hopeful his sons will follow in his footsteps, just like he did with his father.
It's great, you know, even in the bad drought, like seeing come on nearly every bull run with me, even like you do with your kids, and that's your life, you know, you've done it with your dad, and yeah, it's pretty good, eh?
Looking ahead to the future, would you like to see your kids, I know they're young now, but would you like to see them continue on in agriculture? Do you think there's a sort of good future ahead of us if we continue going down this path?
Oh yeah, definitely, like you always got hope as a farmer, you're always hoping for a better future and better rains and better returns, but certainly with your kids, you know, you're definitely hoping you can make something for them to carry on, because you can't buy into it anymore. So it's hopefully they can, because you've done it with your dad and your granddad, so hopefully one of them will be handy enough to come along and take it on. I think they will be, because he's pretty handy now for a little fella.
We're following up with the potato picking. Looks like Tony might have him covered here. He's done his picking, he's done it nice and clean, he gets it off the belt, lays it down neat, and now Jason and Tony onto the stack.
Get your potato peelers ready. After a 12-year break, the Thorpedale Potato Festival is back, bigger and better than ever. More than 10,000 people have converged on this East Gippsland town in Victoria to celebrate the humble spud and have some fun along the way.
What are your support here for these pickers today? All professional, these guys. They all do it for a living. They don't just come here and compete once in a while. They do this every day of the week.
Hello, I'm James Eurster. The Thorpedale district was renowned as one of Australia's premier spud growing areas, but these days, not so much. A consumer preference for washed potatoes has seen demand for traditional brushed spud fall away, and so too the fortunes of Thorpedale. That is until people like Stuart Jennings and the rest of the festival committee came along.
It's been around a 15-month process from when we first started talking about it to today. So a lot of work, a lot of hard work, a lot of long hours.
So what sparked the revival?
A few things. One, the fair lack of promotion in potatoes around the area, and a lot of people used to know Thorpedale for its potatoes, where these days it's not so much, whereas it was all because of the festival. And then the second reason was the committees, all the local community groups were struggling for money, and this was always a great way to bring money in for those community groups, and we just thought that it would be a great way to help them out.
Thorpedale is a bit of a potato capital, so do you think it lost a bit of that branding for a while?
We definitely don't see as much demand for the brush market, which is predominantly what comes out of Thorpedale. You have a lot more people buying washed for, I suppose, convenience and things like that, but they don't understand that their brushed spuds will last longer and usually taste better too. So,
and how much does it go hand in hand, this potato festival, with the Thorpedale community?
Oh, well, this is massively community-based. Like, every community group's represented here today. All the different community groups have got some kind of stall selling food, show bags, you name it. Like, everyone's represented here, and that's where all the profit will go to help those community groups actually function, which they're struggling to do at the moment.
Was there a level of excitement when you said, righto, let's bring it back?
Yeah, there was mixed emotions, but there was definitely excitement about the prospect. And looking around today at how many people are here, we're very happy with the turnout so far. We're only halfway through the day, so it's going to be huge, I think.
Des Jennings, I'm a potato farmer, from local farmer, and we're helping at the potato festival.
Did you expect this bigger turnout for the day?
No, nowhere near. I think we were probably expecting about half the number that are here.
And we're standing here next to a crate full of spuds. How important is it for the Thorpedale region to have the Thorpedale Potato Festival back on the map?
Well, hopefully it promotes potatoes. The Thorpedale area is synonymous with potatoes, and it's a very important part of most of the farmers' income around here, so it's important that we sell potatoes, and this helps.
And a big part of the day is the potato sales. Can you tell us that there's a lot of different colours and varieties to the right and a big crate of potatoes on the left? How many are you hoping to sell today? There's a fairly big crowd there. Do you reckon we can get a bag to everyone?
I don't know about that, but hopefully 5 or 6 tonne anyway.
I'm Amanda, I'm from Melbourne. Well, we weren't really sure what to do this weekend. Heard about the festival, thought we'd come down, love potatoes. What could be better than that?
Are you going to have a crack at the peeling competition?
Not my forte. I'll leave that to the experts, I think.
What do you hope to go home with today?
Well, I think we'll get a couple of potatoes to take home. I think there's some good produce here today, so yeah, that's probably what we'll do. It's really good to get out of Melbourne and see a bit of the countryside. Beautiful place.
Just finishing his stacking here now, so I'll wait for confirmation on the place getters. But it looks like Tony, Jason
Carpenteri, and I'm the events organiser at Thorpedale Potato Festival this year. Went really well. It's always a hotly contested event, the men's open spud picking race. We had some veterans come back for the run that used to be full-time pickers here in Thorpedale, and it was really good. It was won by a father who bet his son for second. The winner was 66 years old, so he's been a gun picker for a long time.
How good is it to see the crowds that have turned out here today?
It's been amazing. We've been wrapped. We were expecting 2,000 to 3,000, and I think we've far exceeded that. So it's great for the community, fundraising, it's awesome.
What does it do for the community?
We struggle up here with kindergarten fundraising and primary school and footy clubs. So it's just, it's a great day for the local fundraising.
Put Thorpedale back on the map?
Definitely back on the map. And with what we've learnt today, next year I think we'll be even better.
A spud-led recovery for the potato district of Thorpedale in Victoria's Gippsland. Thanks to James Euster for that story. Still to come on Rural Reporter today, a training program to get more women into the trucking industry, and a young rodeo star prepares for an American adventure.
For Braden Welby, rodeo is more than just a sport. It's a passion. Today, Braden and his mates are unloading a mob of cattle at his granddad's farm just outside Townsville, here in North Queensland, which they'll use to practice a popular rodeo event, steer wrestling. Hello, I'm Carmen Brown. This 18-year-old was recently named Australian All-Round High School Cowboy, and another young North Queenslander, Katrina Hickey, has taken out the cowgirl title. Their win will take them on an American adventure later this year, when they'll both compete in the world's biggest high school rodeo event, to be held at Rock Springs in Wyoming. There's thousands of dollars worth of prizes on offer, including college scholarships, so the competition is going to be tough. Luckily for Braden, his coach Lorraine, who also happens to be his mum, is on hand to guide him through a rigorous training schedule.
With the different events, they practice like once a week on the different events. This is the first time we've steer wrestled. Yesterday they did calf roping out in the arena. So yeah, we practice different events every day.
So it's much like being an athlete in any sport, really. The more you practice, the better you get.
Yeah, that's right.
Now your son Braden has done quite well for himself recently, or in recent years even, I should say.
How does it feel to see him out there competing and walking away with big titles such as the All-Round Cowboy?
I'm very, very proud of Braden. He's got an unreal mind. He's very set on his goals, and he's very determined to reach his goals. He's an awesome competitor, and he's very down to earth, and it's very rewarding to see him reach those accomplishments. Yeah.
Yeah, you, aside from being his mum, his coach as well, I understand. So you, I guess you're wearing two hats, but as a mum, how do you feel when you see your son out on a bull? And I guess some of these events are a little bit dangerous. How do you feel?
I get very nervous and a bit anxious, but I know that he's prepared for the events. So that, and he's taken safety precautions as well, like wearing a vest and a helmet and stuff for the bull ride. So yeah, I just sort of cheer him on and yeah, wish for the best.
While Lorraine might feel a little nervous watching on from the sidelines, it's her own love of rodeo which inspired Braden to get involved. He says he took up the sport during the family's time in Georgetown.
My mum done it before we moved up there, and then she used to compete while we were up there and used to travel around. So I used to go down and help her push calves and all that up, and always mucking around with cattle and that's been pretty good.
Now, you've recently had a win, the second title, I understand, that you've picked up with the high school rodeo circuit. Tell us a bit about your latest achievement.
Yeah, I went down to Tamworth, ended up winning the bull riding title and the all-round. So that was pretty good, heading down there and picking them two up. Yeah, it was pretty good. I was pretty happy with myself. Glad that I ended up getting it. Now I can head over to America, so looking forward to that.
How much preparation actually goes into competing in these events?
Yeah, I try to do something nearly every day, much as I can. Always try and do something. I try and get fit, just get my technique right and all that. And yeah.
So do you have to run? And I guess like any athlete, do you train on that aspect as well, or is it really just out in the horses?
Just out here. I sort of run around chasing the cattle and all that, so that's my running for me. But yeah.
And do you have a particular favourite event? I know that you've done well in most of them, but do you have a particular favourite?
Probably the bull riding. Get a bit of adrenaline rush out of that and like that.
I always ask bull riders, what goes through your head the minute the chute opens? What do you feel when that happens?
Oh, no, I sort of forget about everything, just go off the flow, and it feels pretty good. So.
What about in the lead up, in the minutes beforehand?
Oh, I get a little bit nervous, but surely everyone does.
Now, you mentioned that you are off to the States later this year. Tell us a bit about that event.
Yeah, head over in July. I was over there last year, and it was a really good show. Yeah, really pretty big over there.
Now, this is actually the biggest rodeo in the world, I understand, is that right?
Oh, for high school, yeah. Yeah, it's a really good, big deal.
So 1,500 other competitors and a lot of prize money. I understand even scholarships to universities. It's quite a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a pretty big deal. Got a few college things last year, scholarships offered to me, but haven't taken any up yet, so see what happens this year.
Round of mid-eight.
Very good, though. Really good.
We're looking at increasing the numbers of women driving trucks nationally. Currently, our research suggests that it's as low as 1% over in the eastern states and about 10% over here in the west. So we have a lot of work to do to change the current culture and to encourage more women into careers into the heavy vehicle sector.
It's largely thanks to truck drivers that anything arrives in Australia's remote outback communities. But being part of the trucking industry is not for the faint-hearted. Drivers work extremely long hours, towing huge loads and often in quite testing weather conditions. G'day, I'm Lucy Bell. The overwhelming majority of these road train drivers are men, but a group of women in Western Australia's Pilbara region have plans to change that.
My name is Lyndall Denny and I'm an MC driver. MC stands for multi-combination, and that's driving road trains.
I'm Heather Jones and I'm one of the Pilbara Heavy Haulage Girls as well.
And Candice, do you want to say hello?
Hello.
Candice has come over from Brisbane to join us to brush up on her driving school. She's actually been driving trucks for 2 years in Brisbane, but she wanted to get into bigger trucks, so she's come over here. She's the first female MC truck driver that's deaf, so we're working with her at the moment.
These heavy haulage girls have set up a training program targeting women. They've already got 30 female drivers behind the wheel of a prime mover, and they have hundreds more on their waiting list.
What we've found is that the reason women can't get into the industry is mainly because the HR department in the employment sector of industry just don't give us a chance because we don't have that experience. What we offer is 160 free hours of training on the job, which is what you really, really need, so then that you know what to do when you're out there. And we've trained 30 before Candace, but Candace is our first challenging student.
Candace spent many, many years trying to break into the sector. She has applied for 2,500 truck driving positions over the last 10 years, and her deafness and the fact that she's a female preclude her from getting those jobs. We have a wonderful local employer currently training Candace and looking very promising in terms of giving her a go. We're just sorting out a few last-minute glitches in terms of communication. She's an amazing girl doing a wonderful job.
And I know you've brought along a whiteboard today, and I've seen a little bit of Auslan going on in front of me here. How has communication been going for everyone?
3 months before she arrived, we started learning Auslan so that we could communicate with her. We've sort of gone through most of the situations that we could foresee on the highways, and a lot of people say two-way radios, she can't hear two-way radios, but a lot of the truck drivers drive up and down the highway with their radio off, so that's not really a big issue. Her writing is absolutely impeccable. She has a whiteboard, so if there's any issue, she just quickly writes something down. And also uses text messaging, and she text messages the weighbridge, and the weighbridge just texts her back and says that you can come over the weighbridge.
Candace, I might put this question to you and Lyndall and Heather, if you wouldn't mind helping with the answer. How have you found coming to the Pilbara?
She just said it's perfect. She loves it.
I love Gawky, Wawky, Gawky.
I think it looked like you were doing that toot toot, yeah, of the truck.
in and out of the truck, and throwing straps and ratchets and chains. That's what she loves, hard work.
Heather, can you tell me a bit about the truck that we can see here that you've brought today?
Oh, this is my good old faithful truck. I think this truck has trained about 25 drivers. It's 10 years old and it's a V8, 580 horsepower, and it can tow 3 trailers.
We're trailer free this morning. About what we can see behind the chairs here.
So this is where I sleep. Sometimes refer to it as a coffin because it's so small. Over there you've got my bag, and there's a week's clothes. Behind that you've got a plastic box full of food for a week and water, my pillow, and that there's a bunk. So if you're really game, you could join me and you could jump in there one night.
And so when you're doing your training with the young trainees like Candace, are they sitting in the passenger seat like I am alongside you?
Yeah, normally, depending on what experience they've got in their licence, normally they sit there for 2, 3, 4, or 5 days, and then we swap. So we have a very intensive training program so that they go through every knob and button and every switch in the truck so they know what to do, and then we train them, first of all, in the car park, and then from there we get onto the road and then out with trailers.
And what's usually the trickiest point of training?
If you've got a Road Ranger gearbox, it's not in this truck but in some other trucks I've used, that would be the trickiest thing, just getting the revs right so that you can get the gear in without it going and giving the owner of the truck a nervous breakdown.
And it took 3 very good steps to get into the chair. So I imagine driving along the Pilbara's roads, you get to see a very pretty vista.
It is. This is our office window and our view is just phenomenal.
Ultimately, once we had our training institute up and running, we would be looking at 80 to 100 women a year. A little way off at this stage, we're still in the formative stages. We have 300 women on a waiting list.
300 women on the waiting list. Is that Australia-wide, all ages, all backgrounds?
It's Australia-wide, and they all tell the same story. All enthusiastic and eager. They have their HR, HC, MC licence, but cannot get a start in the industry. So we'll be bringing the girls over west, training them up, and then drip-feeding them into the sector to sort of stave off any driver shortages in the future.
Road train driver Lyndall Denny, a member of the Pilbara Heavy Haulage Girls team, hoping to get more women involved in the industry.